You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. This is James, and today it's me and my co-host, Mr. Luke LaCoy.
Hey, hey.
And everyone wants to know our relationship, Luke, thanks to Barry Katz. They want to know what's going on. What's our dynamic? What's our dynamic? That was a great question, actually. Or didn't you think?
It was. It was interesting.
That might have been, I mean, I have a lot of favorite episodes. I would say our one with Cinco Paul was really fun. That one with Barry was amazing. Any with Robert G. I mean, really, we're probably some of the luckiest people. Like, we get to interview some really cool people that are willing to give us, you know, half an hour of their time. Barry gave us way more time than I was told we were going to get. So again, thank you to him. If you guys haven't heard that episode, for some reason you skipped it, do not stop this episode right now and go back and listen to it. I don't care that you stop this episode. I want you to. You need to go watch that one because listen to it or whatever, because it's eye opening. And the greatest part is Barry said, right? Study the greats. Like I wrote down the thing that he said, because I want to get it printed and like put somewhere in my office, because it will totally remind me what it is. Study greatness, imitate greatness, become great. Like, for me, that was like, all right, that we're you and I are on the right path, right? Like, we're that's what we do. Is this podcast, all the stuff we do is about studying greatness. And so on that topic, we started the book club. So if you didn't know about the book club, now you know about the book club. It'll be an every month thing. And this month's book was Bored Standing Up, A Comic's Life by Steve Martin. And Steve Martin is one of my all-time favorite comedians. Like, I love him. I watch his stuff. I have his albums. Above the wall is a framed. It's in a frame. It's his album is up there framed. So he's one of my top, like, comedians of all time. And so this book I've probably read 4 times, and there's just so many quotes in there that I love. And the one that always stands out to me is, and I wrote it down because I made sure I had it. Comedy is a distortion of what is happening, and there will always be something happening. That is one of the best lines ever, because that I've heard people say, what do I talk about on stage? What should my premises be about? What should I do? What should I focus on? Focus on what's happening. What is happening in your life? What's happening around you? And literally, that's what Steve Martin did. I mean, he used some of the topics of the time. He talked about his philosophy degree, like, just all the stuff that he did, or his philosophy classes that he took. But he, like, talked about all that stuff on stage and used it. You know, he did magic at the magic shop at Disney. He did a show at Knott's Berry Farm. And actually, I didn't know this, Luke, before reading this, how close Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland actually are.
Oh yeah, super close.
Yeah, I always assumed they were like way farther away than they were. I didn't realize they were like down the freeway, because he would go from one to the other, and it was just like amazing. So and you know, and then he went into comedy, and even in there he said, you know, I did stand-up comedy for 18 years. 10 of those years were spent learning, 4 years were spent refining, and 4 years were spent in wild success. I was seeking comic originality, and fame fell on me as a byproduct. The course was more plodding than heroic. It's funny, because he doesn't even say, like, I set out to do this. Like, he just was working at a thing that he loved, that he enjoyed, the craft that he loved, and he kind of messed with it and changed it, and he blew up.
I don't remember. You got to fill me in. When he was starting, he wasn't starting in comedy necessarily, right? Like, he liked performing.
Yeah.
As musician, was that
he did magic and music and stuff. Yeah, because he did, like, music at Knott's Berry Farm, like a little show thing that they did, like, every day, like I forgot how many times a day it was. It was like a bunch of times a day. Mm-hmm. And then he started doing magic, and then he would go to open mics, and then he said like he was doing what he thought a comedian was.
Right.
So it's like this weird, unique twist on, and that's funny because we always laugh, like, not that we always laugh, but you could see a person that goes to an open mic trying to do their imitation of what they think a comedian is for, like, their first couple of times being on stage. And you're like, oh, and now everybody goes, oh my gosh, that is going to be terrible. They're not going to figure it out. But they did, like, and he did. He did a parody, basically, of a comedian, and became a hit headlining comedian.
I like too that a couple of times he heard a joke from someone else and then asked that person permission to use that joke in his routine when he was starting. that's unheard of.
Yeah, I mean,
from now.
I mean, if I was at open mic and I heard a joke that somebody did that I really liked or I thought would fit in my set, I might buy that joke from them. I might be like, hey, can I buy that joke from you? Because sometimes you can't think of everything. And there are, like, Robert G. Lee does a writing class every week. There's a lot of, like, groups of comedians that meet together and go over jokes and stuff. So I think that's not a bad way to do things because you're using someone else's brain for material that you might have come up with eventually, but why not use it now if you can? And I would love to pay comedians to write different jokes and stuff for me. I've been paid to write jokes for other comedians, so why not? You know, and for some reason, what's weird is when someone pays me to write jokes, I can do their voice a lot better than if I was trying to like think of that same joke or premise for myself. I might stumble a little bit longer, maybe because there's not as much pressure on myself. I don't know.
I have the same thing, so I don't know what that is.
It's
easier to write for other people. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing is, right? I have all these feature films and pilots ideas that I have. I don't get around to them, but I'm writing other people's stuff all the time. So it's one of those things. But so one of those things is like, you know, he talks about his act. He talks about how he shaped that act. He went to San Francisco and he did all these things and he wore the suit and he was just being like kind of silly and like just making fun of what stand-up comedy was at the time. And it really changed. And I think really a lot of it was due to the time period he was also doing stand-up comedy, right? Mm-hmm. You think that's had a big part of it?
I was surprised to learn that he was such a ladies' man. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was a handsome dude, though. Like, he's still kind of handsome for an older guy.
Mm. But I don't know. I just always, like, envision him as, like, I don't know, this super... like wow, what's it like a Mr. Rogers almost, because like I haven't seen that much of his stand-up, so like my persona of Steve was like Mr. Rogers almost.
That's funny. I mean, he does have some curses in his stand-up and stuff though, so that's really good. But I mean, like, think about this guy gave us, you know, King Tut, and like he, and then The Jerk is based on like there's a lot of jokes that he did in his stand-up routine that then made it into The Jerk and stuff, which The Jerk is one of my favorite comedy movies of all time. I watch it any day of the week. But I think the biggest thing about Steve Martin is that he didn't go out seeking to be a stand-up comedian. He didn't go out seeking to break through and be a legendary comedian. That wasn't his goal, right? And a lot of us as comedians do seek to do that. We want to be the next whatever, Steve Martin, George Carlin, Chris Rock, whoever, Bill Burr, Joe Rogan, whoever your person is that you like or that you want to imitate, we all tend to go out and start like, hey, I want to be like this. Like, I really loved Chris Rock. Like, he's a big inspiration to me, and I really want to be like Chris Rock. I know there's a lot of other things, features of myself that will make me never like Chris Rock. But I think it was one of those things where I really, like, really kind of channeled him. I really liked his style. I did the repeating thing sometimes. I did the pacing of the stage and stuff. And it was really like, I was imitating someone that I wanted to be. And I think that was a big part of Steve Martin is he was imitating comedians as he was imitating a comedian, if that makes sense. Like, he was like, it was like almost like a meta version of it. Like an Andy Kaufman-esque like performance of comedy. And it was so weird. But he also has like a quote that I really love. It says, "Thankfully, persistence is a great substitute for talent." Now, I think he's underselling himself there. But I think that that's a real thing that we all need to remember as comedians is sometimes we're not all like top tier comedians, right? Most of us who are probably listening to this or probably out there are not selling out venues or selling out theaters or selling out around the world or whatever. But persistence is the key, because you'll see these people that start stand up. They do it for a year. They don't get that far, except for maybe a couple shows here and there, maybe not off the open mic circuit. And then they get frustrated. And then they quit because they think like within a year they're going to get like a Netflix special or something. I don't know what they're thinking, but they give up. It's the ones who have been persistent for 5, 6, 7, 10 years that end up somewhere, that end up doing it as a living. Go ahead.
Yeah. And Steve had an interesting process because he always, he would record, I think he would record his sets.
Yeah.
Or if not, he would always take notes on his sets to see like what worked and what didn't, and he was very diligent about that and like tweaking his set every single time he did to make his jokes the best they could be.
Yeah, and I think that's
big key too, you know?
Yeah. That, I mean, that's the thing. That's a big thing that a lot of comedians skip though. They don't record. Oh, I didn't record my set. Oh, I don't record my set. It's like, you're missing out. It's like for sports fans, it's what sports teams do before the games. They review the footage. So they know, hey, this is a mistake we made last time. This is a mistake they made last time. This is how we can capitalize on it. This is how they can capitalize on us. So let's not make that mistake. If you're not paying attention, if you're not reviewing the footage, so to speak, or the audio, if you're not reviewing that stuff, how are you going to get better? You're just going to keep repeating the jokes the same way. They're not going to be as funny. You're not going to find tags. You're not going to be able to figure out your pacing, all that stuff. I mean, it's insane. I even heard Joe Rogan one time talk about how he would go to the Comedy Store, do his set, and then listen to it on the way home. And then when he got home, he listened to it again and then make notes or changes or add tags or whatever and stuff, you know? It's crazy.
I think if I remember right, I want to say that Steve also went to the clubs beforehand to get an idea of how the club was and what the demographic was, I think.
Yeah he did some things like that where he would go to different places and check stuff out. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, he's just so interesting, right? You know, like, he went from, I mean, literally that one quote where he talks about the 18 years of stand-up comedy. That's the thing is, probably most people don't actually know that he was a stand-up comedian. They think of him as like a comedy actor and stuff. But I mean, he really like did it in so quickly in such a weird way that most people won't ever remember it. You know, 10 years learning, 4 years refining, and 4 years success. You know, most comedians would give up in 18 years. You know, they would. They would just, if it took 14 years to get to that point of 4 years of wild success, most comedians would give up before that. They wouldn't even make it those first 10 years of just learning, you know? And I know Barry Katz also talked about this, is learning from others ahead of you. And he did learn from other people ahead of him. He learned magic and he learned banjo. He integrated all these things into his sets. He did balloon animals. He did water gags. He did the arrow through the head. Like, he did things that now we might call hokey or hacky or stupid or whatever, but he did them and they worked for what he was doing at the time. So we have to find what thing will work for us, what thing will be our thing. Maybe it is doing magic there. Maybe it's there was like a, we had like a rapping comedian on one time. Maybe it'll be musical comedy, right? Maybe it'll be prop comedy. I know people are mad about Carrot Top, but that dude's like one of the highest selling comedians of all time. You know, it's like, find your thing. Even if it's something where people don't let other comedians tell you what to do with your career. Like, we're not telling you, I'm not telling you how to do your career. I'm just saying, like, learn from other people and put that to use, but don't let other comedians dissuade you from doing comedy your way. Right.
Yep. Puppets are nothing.
I won't respect you as a comedian if you do puppets, but do your thing. You do you. Okay. But Jeff Dunham, I'm calling you out right now. Jeff Dunham, you're not a real comedian to me. You might be a real comedian to other people. You're not a real comedian to me. Forever, he will never be a real comedian to me.
I think you should come on the show and debate James.
Do it, Jeff Dunham. Do it. And don't bring any of your stupid puppets either. I'm not debating Walter or the Ahmed or the Jalapeno or any of them. I'm not debating any of them. That's right. I know who they are. I know all about you, Jeff Dunham. It's called out Jeff Dunham. What I also thought, there was a great line, and it made me think about what we do here, and also I work with the teens. If you guys aren't familiar with that, I work with teens teaching them stand up. It's mostly for confidence and public speaking stuff, but I teach them how to write a joke, how to perform. We do open mics, all that kind of stuff. But he says, teaching is, after all, a form of show business. And he's very right. I mean, you think about what teachers have to do, stand up in front of people, keep them engaged, keep them entertained, let them make them retain stuff, make them, because if they're like in class, like, oh, this sucks, they're never going to retain anything, right? So teaching is a thing of form of show business. And I actually found myself like loving teaching teens more than I thought I would. Like the first time I did, I was like, oh man, this is not great. But I was like, as the class went on, I was like, this is so fun. I was actually sad when it was over and they asked me to do two more. So this year I'll be doing two different classes like that. So
nice.
I find that also when we teach things, we learn more because we have to retain it to teach it, right?
Yep.
And that was the goal of this book, right?
Yeah, you know something when you can teach it effectively. And I think that's when you know. Because if you're like in the middle of giving a lecture and you don't know what you're talking about, that's going to be pretty evident that you don't.
Now, what was your biggest takeaway from the book? Like, what was the thing that you like? Because like I said, mine was really him and his in the 18 years and like all that stuff. And then also like him talking about, you know, just like the process of him building stuff and also learning that Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm are very close.
I kind of liked to see the progression that he did, because it wasn't like, you know, one day he did a club and then the next day he was doing like super stadiums. It was always a step-by-step progression for him. Like he was like, it was a big deal to do like 500 seats. And then he was like, wow, it's a big deal to do 1,000 seats. And it kept going up and up like that. So it's not like, it wasn't like an overnight success. He was doing what he had to do to get where he was. And the other really cool thing is, like, yeah, he was super unique. He found his own style. But the part where like his audience members would follow him outside of a club because they didn't know like if the show was still going on or not.
Yeah,
that was amazing. I've never heard of that happening, and probably hasn't except for him. And that's just so neat that, and then it kept, you know, it kept happening until the crowd was too big to take out safely outside the club.
Could you imagine that if your set was just so wild and ridiculous that people didn't actually know when it was over? Like, that's insane. Like, what do you like? I don't know, man. That's a big deal. I think honestly, I would be so happy to have that kind of following. Maybe not following, but like that kind of like aura where like people are like unsure, like, hey, this is funny, but like, is it over? Are we still enjoying this? Like, what is this? It almost gave me that like Andy Kaufman vibe where like you didn't know whether Andy Kaufman was being real about things or not being real about things. And I think the same thing with Steve Martin. Even some of his stuff, you're if you watched it or you listened to stand up, you're like, is he being serious? I mean, I know it's like stand up, but also is it being serious? Like, you know, you never knew. Like, it felt like so honest. It never felt like forced. And I know that was like stand up and it was a show, but it was like, I don't know. That I think that's probably the biggest part of what he did that made me enjoy it so much, where his, you know, excuse me, you know, like he would do all those things. And it was just like, are you doing it because it's part of the act? Are you doing it because it's part of who you are? Are you doing it because it was instantaneous? Is it improv? It was like, what? That's the thing, is like, it doesn't feel also, it felt not as rehearsed as you know it was, if that makes sense. Like, and I know he rehearsed it. Like, that was one of his strong points, is that he had tenacity to keep working on it over and over and over again and refining and just fixing and fixing and fixing and fixing. And so it's like, it's amazing. I can't imagine somebody, like, I can't imagine working that hard. And I do, and I feel like I do work hard. I don't know if I work that hard. I don't think I work that hard. I mean, I would love to, and I would love to say that I do, but in all honesty, I don't feel like I work as hard as he does. And maybe that's why I haven't got there. But also, it hasn't been 18 years for me, right? Coming this July, which is going to be my 40th birthday, that will be about 6 years of me doing stand-up. So I'm not even near the 10-year mark that he talked about to get to like the learning process. And I am learning every day. I'm always learning something. So that's why we're doing book club too, right? The whole point is to learn something. Next month's going to be Judd Apatow, Sick in the Head, which is all these interviews with all these amazing comedians. So we're going to learn from like 40 different people in one book. That's going to be amazing. I think Jerry Seinfeld's in there twice, if I remember right. So that's going to be great. And then we're going to go to Stephen King and learn writing stuff, which is great because we all need to learn writing. Then it'll be Bob Newhart. Then Mike Sachs and conversations with top comedy writers. Then How to Write Funny with Scott Dickers, who we had here. And then a really funny book by our friend Robert G. Lee, What's the Big Idea? Comedian Explains God, the Universe, and Other Minor Stuff. And I think that one will be fun for the end of the year because it'll spark premises and ideas for people. I think when they read it, having somebody explain something funny, and then you'll find like, oh, you know, what'd be funny is if he would have talked about this instead, or if he would have done this instead, and then you come up with your own ideas. I don't know if you ever do that. If you read something or hear something, and then you're like, oh, what if he would have went this way, or what if they would have went this way? Do you ever do that?
No, but I get ideas from what I read for myself.
Yeah. Do you ever listen to stand-up and then, like, somebody talks, like, has a premise, like, they're talking about their dog or something, and then they, like, go off on this weird tangent about their dog, but you're like, oh, I thought they were going to go this way, and then you, like, start thinking of what it could have been, and then you, like, write your own joke about that premise and stuff? Have you ever done that?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. Usually I'll hear a premise that I hadn't thought about, and it's something, like, super simple, and then I'm like, oh, I could do something like that or twist it a different way. And
Yeah, definitely.
I always get ideas when I watch stand up or listen to stand up or read about stand up.
Yeah. I was annoyed as I went and saw Louis C.K. in Oxnard, and they made us lock up our phones. And I like to take notes when I listen to comedians and write stuff down, and I couldn't do that. And so, and I know in the middle of that show, I had like 8 different ideas. I was like, oh, this would be so good if I did a clean version of this. This way instead of what he talked, you know, and I just obviously I totally forgot all those because I didn't do them. But if I would have had my phone, it would have been so good. I wouldn't have recorded anything. I would have been like, listen, I'm not going to record anything. I just want to write bits down. You could come and look at my phone and delete anything that you don't like afterwards, but I seriously just want to. So it would have been great.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the bootleggers.
I know. People, man. People be messing it up for everybody. Yeah. I guess the biggest thing is, what's your biggest takeaway? What's the thing that, like, you feel like resonated with you the most from this book?
I think just like what he said with always trying, like, whatever you think is funny, and, you know, not necessarily like what other people think is funny. Cause he kept, like, you know, his comedy is bizarre, and he's probably one of the only people who found his stuff funny until he did it enough and, you know, got notoriety from doing it.
Yeah.
So I think that's the big key takeaway for me.
Yeah, have faith in yourself, because like you said, it took him 18 years. You know, that's for me, that's a big one. And the other one is comedy's distortion of what is happening, and there will always be something happening. That means something is happening in your life. Something's happening around you that can be turned into a comedic moment. Even if it's the worst thing in your life, the worst thing possible happening to you, you could turn it into something. Because I think it's Tig Notaro, right? Who turned like her cancer thing into a comedy thing. Like, literally the worst thing that ever happened to her in her entire life got turned into a comedy thing. Like, there's nothing, no one should be able to say, oh, I don't have anything to talk about. What are you, just sit in a plain white room all day on a floor and stare at the wall? Like, what do you mean you don't have anything to talk about? Like, you have to ask, even you could talk about, so you could make a joke out of that. You know, I sit in a cube all day, I eat gruel. Like, you know, what, you could find something. Like, there's always something going on. And our lives are not stagnant. That's why I always say to comedians, like, I don't know what to talk about. Well, then go out into the world, listen to people talk, go to Target and walk around and listen to people's conversations. There's insanity going on all around you. Take it and mine it and create something out of it. And I say Target because I go to Target and I hear some of the most weird off the wall conversations I've ever heard in my entire life. I'm like, what is going on with people? Like, craziness. And comedians, That's gold, right? You didn't even have to really pan for it. You just walked around and picked up nuggets as you were going. You know, keep your phone out and write stuff down that you hear. I do it all the time. You know, my life, your life, everyone's life has something to offer. And if you're not using it and they're not using it, I'm going to use it. Why not? You know, it's not theft then. It's just borrowing.
Yep. I've borrowed conversations plenty of times.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I mean, I don't know how much of Michael Palasek's The One Thing is real. I'm assuming all of it because he seems like legit about it. But I mean, like, what if that was just a conversation? And he did overhear a conversation about that between the dad and the kid. And he took that, even though he was part of it, he did take that and use it in his stuff. So don't be afraid to branch out. Don't be afraid to be unique. Don't be afraid to do it. I would say read this book once a year. Let it inspire you. Let you think about what you could do to get to that next level, to that next step. Because if it took Steve Martin 18 years, and he's one of the most prolific, amazing comedy writers, comedians of all time, if it took him 18 years, don't kick yourself at year 1 or year 8 or year 10 or year 15 or year 17 even. Like, just keep grinding. Some people it happens for way faster. And some people it doesn't, right? I think Bill Burr took like 20 years. Louis C.K. took like 20 years. Like, it just takes time for some people. Some people, it goes like that. You know, some people, they're on the internet and then they're selling out arenas like Bo Burnham. You know, like, it could be a million different things. You know, it took Preacher Lawson like 10 years to get to where he is now. And now he's selling out arenas and doing a BET special. And he did a TV show and like, he's doing all kinds of stuff, but it took time. He didn't go from being Preacher on at an open mic to Preacher on America's Got Talent. That's not how it works. And it's same thing with Steve Martin, same thing with all of us. Just keep grinding. Just keep doing it. Your gut, if you have the perseverance, if you have the drive, if you have the will, you can do anything. And I think Steve Martin is the biggest reflection of that, because his comedy is so unique and not like anything else we've ever seen before. And he made it work. He made a life and a career out of it.
Word.
Word. All right, Luke, where can people find you at?
Luke LaCoy on the interweb.
Luke LaCoy on the interweb. You can find me at jamesdcrevison.com, comedypreneur.com, or go to fiverr.com/jamesdcrevison. And I will be there doing more stuff for more people, because I am a busy bee. Like, I'm so busy. So thank you guys so much for listening. Have a great one. Go check out the book. If you didn't do it, please buy it. If you're going to buy it, please use our link so that we get a little bit of money to help this podcast keep going. That's how we pay the bills, keep the lights on, keep Luke's hair looking sharp so Barry Katz can compliment his hair. So thank you again so much for listening. Please have a good one, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.